with the next.
Thank you.
And the tea is brewing.
As you can hear.
Sounds good.
All right. We have been in the middle of this parakha for three shiurim so far.
What?
What page are we on? Well, I don't know what pasuk is. 350 is chapter 20.
Yeah, so the last couple of weeks we've been looking at the first half of this parak, which is the conversation between Yonatan and David over the status or the relationship with their father, with Yonatan's father, the question of whether or not Shaul really does want to kill David, and they devise a plan to enable them to determine Shaul's intention. There is a Rosh Chodesh feast scheduled for tomorrow. David is going to go and hide in the field. Yonatan will go to the feast, and David's absence will be noticed, thereby evoking from Shaul some kind of response. If that response is mild and understandable and reasonable and rational, then that's an indication that everything is good. If that response, as David suspects, is going to be anger and intent to harm, then that will indicate to Yonatan that his father really does have a dangerous intentions vis-a-vis David, and that will signal to them that David needs to flee. In order to communicate that, however, it's not a matter of Yonatan just coming and letting David know. If in fact his father wants to kill him, then that makes David a state criminal. Yonatan, as the crown prince, can't just go out and meet with David in the middle of the street. So he devises a plan whereby David will hide in the field, and Yonatan will go out with a bow and arrow together with his na'ar, and he'll shoot three arrows. And the code he'll use to tell the na'ar how to gather those arrows will reflect the message to David. If he tells him that the arrows are here, closer, hither, go and get them, then that is an indication that David himself can come hither, can come back. If he tells him that the arrows are yonder, beyond the target, then that's an indication that David must too go away. Right? So that the arrows, or the message vis-a-vis the arrows, should reflect the message to David himself. That's sort of where we got up. I think that's where we got up to. And in the midst of this conversation, we noticed certain aspects of the relationship between David and Yonatan themselves, as close as it is, and as close as they are, there are certain cracks in that relationship that are beginning to show themselves. David, I think, goes to Yonatan initially with the expectation or the hope that Yonatan would embrace David and come with him. In the end, he finds Yonatan in denial and challenges him, etc. When David tries to say to him, if you're going to go and test your father, what's going to happen? How are you going to come and tell me what his feelings are? I think, again, the expectation is that he's going to just come and run with him. But in fact, he does not. Instead, he devises a plan whereby David has to hide in the fields, and the message will be communicated via bow and arrow, which is not, I think, what David had expected. Nonetheless, that is where we leave our heroes in the story. Yes?
Spaces in the text for your theory that David wanted Yonatan to come with him?
There are hints. Spaces as in explicit? No. Hints.
What about Midrash? Are there Midrash?
There's one Midrash that I think is, we'll come to at the very end, which has to do with the transition between Perek Chaf and Perek Chaf Aleph. The Chazal are extremely critical of Yonatan and his behavior in this Perek. The language of Chazal placed the critique at a different point than the question of whether Yonatan would have gone with him. It's a theory that I've heard from Rav Medan and Rav Benun. Is there proof in the text? No. it's okay. As an explicit proof, but I think that the hints are there. David comes to him initially. Right? Why does David come back to the palace altogether to tell him that his father is trying to kill him? The response to the Yonatan's denial, the plan in the field, I think it all reflects a certain expectation from David that in the end is unmet. When they finally embrace at the end of the parak and cry, this we'll talk about in the last year on the parak, it says that they cried on each other's shoulders, Ad David Higdil. David cried more. You sense that there's something more there that we're not being told. Why is it that David's crying more? Why is it relevant? Who cried more? We're not measuring whose emotional state is of greater distress at this point. There's an again, so that's what's written in the Navi. So I think that there's a reflection there of something that David expected or had hoped, or the disappointment in or the heartbreak in David is greater. Yonatan goes back to his father. Yonatan goes back to, and that's also reflected. David goes off to become a fugitive for the rest of his life, and Yonatan goes back to the palace. There's a certain irony and a certain coldness to that statement. And all of these are, I think, hints to the fact that somewhere along the line we could have expected a different behavior from Yonatan, as we could have from Michal, who also could have gone with David and didn't. Those are parts of the story. David ends up fleeing on his own, and half the story, the dynamic of what goes on afterwards, the next couple of prakim, is the fact that he's alone, and that he has to gather around him supporters from his own tribe, and the civil war that develops. I think that there is a lot of truth to this assertion that had any of the royal family chosen to side with David, would have been different.
Well, there's not too many places in Tanakh where you have these choices and people cross over to the other side, so to speak, you know.
Well, you had various rebellions. You had rebellions in David's life.
He doesn't.
That's not clear that he doesn't.
Oh.
But that's a huge machlok. I actually think he does stay.
Really?
If you look at Parshat Baloscha carefully, I think it's clear that he does stay.
Oh,
but that's a machlok as Ramban and Rashi. But in David's own experiences, you have many instances where there's rebellion in his ranks, Avshalom, Adoniyahu, etc., and the people take sides. It's not uncommon. Somewhere along the line, the generals have to take sides, the military has to take sides, the people take sides. If you're faced with that kind of public conflict, at some point or another, you need to choose a side, and that's part of the challenge. So, is it explicit? No, but I think it's implicit enough that it plays a dynamic in this story. Yonatan is a tragic figure in the story of David. Chazal placed the entire tragedy of David's life in his flight from Shaul clearly on the shoulders of Yonatan. But they do so for a reason that I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give away what's coming. The next story in the Perek is David flees to the temple, to the Mizbeach. There's no temple, there's only a Mizbeach, to Nov, the city of Akonim, where the Mizbeach is. And they give him refuge, and they give him food, lechem upon him, and they give him a sword of Goliath. And when Shaul hears about it, he goes, and one of the most tragic moments in the Sefer is he literally murders all of the Kohanim in the city of Nov. Remember the story. Nov Yerakonim, so the darkest spot on Shaul's record. Chazal blamed the fall of Nov Yerakonim on Yonatan.
Wow, that's pretty heavy.
So, it's all, And I'll show you where. I will show you that quote. It's like in your face, kind of remarkable statement. So I do think that exactly what point they're pointing out, I think, is there tangential. The shot of it, I think, is the fact that Yonathan chooses not to go with David.
I don't remember well enough, but I know one of them, it would say in the Tanakh that one loved the other one, but I don't remember which direction that
they both, the use of the term love in Tanakh is not an uncommon term in Klal in ancient literature to use for both love, emotional bond between male and female, as well as an emotional bond between male and male. It's a lot of modern critics who love to pick up on that terminology and write inappropriate things about it. But that's clearly not the case. It's just not an uncommon use of terms.
There are many uses of the word.
If you read, what's the name of that biography of Lincoln that came out? Yeah. There's a book written about Lincoln's cabinet.
I'll use an opacity.
Something about the enemy.
I forgot what it's called. I'm whatever. But he makes a whole point about the fact that the use of language, because he's talking about the letters and of the people we're talking 200 years ago. The use of language that we would consider sort of weird to be in describing a relationship between two men in prior to 100 years ago, that was not an uncommon, wasn't a reflection of anything inappropriate. It was just not an uncommon use. But it does say that they had a love between them and a bond between them that was exceptional. But it was mutual.
Yonatan had a lot more to lose at that point. I mean, you know, he didn't want to give up.
I wouldn't have wanted to be in Yonatan's choice, yeah, for sure. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes under any circumstances. All right.
So
let's jump in. Parakhav Pasakhov Dalit is where we're up to today.
It's 351 in this one. 351, yeah. Thank you,
Jim. David Basadeh. David is hiding in the field. Make sure that everybody has a copy of the source page. If you don't, then please pass one down. Make sure I save one for myself.
This is proves the fact that people should leave them so we take them the next time.
Vayisater David Basadeh. Vayi Achodesh.
Oh, wait, you're back in here.
Chav Dalet.
Okay.
Vayisater David Basadeh. Vayi Achodesh. Vayeshev HaMelech al Alechem Leecho. Scene is set. David is hiding in the field. The Suda of Rosh Chodesh comes. And the people are sitting to have their feast of Rosh Chodesh together with the king. Vayeshev HaMelech al Moshavo kifam b'fam al Moshav Hakir. The king sat in his place, as was his practice every time, al Moshav Hakir, by the seat, by the wall, meaning the throne or the seat or the chair or the couch that was closest to the wall. Mm-hmm. Why is that of significance? Why do I care where his seat is.
Was this the scene of the crime where he tried to stab David the first time?
It's the same palace where he always is, right? It's the same dining room. What is the significance of Moshav Bakir? Why do I care if his seat is by the wall or not?
Well, he can't be attacked from behind.
Right, so I think that you have a reflection a little bit of, or an emphasis a little bit on Shaul's mindset, which is one of paranoia. It's been playing on him for a while, and the fact that his throne, I would say every king's throne is by the wall, but in Shaul's case, that becomes significant because Shaul is paranoid. Vayakam Yonatan, Vayeshev Avner Mitzad Shaul, Vayipaked Mekom David. This verse requires some explanation. Vayakam Yonatan got up. Vayeshev Avner Mitzad Shaul. Avner sat beside Shaul. Vayipaked Mekom David, leaving empty David's place. Or leaving conspicuously absent David's place. Who is Avner?
His general.
Avner is the general. We've met Avner back in Perek Ted Zion Yud Zion, Battle of Goliath. What is the Vayakom Yonatan? Yonatan got up. What is that a reflection of? Yonatan got up. What does that mean? So here the question is, there's a bit of a game of musical chairs going on. And the rearrangement of people's seating is not an accident. It's caused by the absence of David, and hence, Vayim Baked Makom David. And people are not in their normal places. Where are they? That's not clear 100%. We know that Avner is sitting next to Shaul. Is that an appropriate place for the general when Yonatan, who is the prince, who is the son of the king, is not? Vayakom Yonatan. Yonatan is not sitting there. Yonatan is not next to the king. Where is Yonatan? Doesn't say. But he's in the room. We don't necessarily know where in the room.
But is that but he's all because, not. I'm sorry, is that all because David is not there?
All because David is not there. So what does David's absence do to the seating arrangements in this thing? So here there's an interesting machloket Rashi and Radak. I gave you the source page. I wanted to look at this. Rashi, in source 3. I'll translate as we go. Vayakam Yonatan. Yonatan arose, got up, amad mimkomo, got up from his place. Lefi she'en derech haben liot mesev etzel aviv. Would not be appropriate, would not have been respectful for the son to break bread, to recline and to have a meal next to his father. She'darkan haya le'achol misubin al mitot. Because they weren't sitting on chairs at a table. They were lying on couches, says Rashi, like we have this sort of the vision of Roman style. Right? That was, says Rashi, common in the time of Tanakh as well. So they weren't sitting, they were leaning, they were lying, they were on couches, and it would have been inappropriate for the crown prince, for the son, to kind of been lying next to his father, breaking bread, having a meal. Right? Just not respectful.
Is it more respectful to have your general lying around?
Right. Yeah, it's not respectful. Because that's what he says. I don't know. That's what he says. Because it would have been.
Shaul is reclining and everybody else is sitting up.
No, everybody is reclining, but Shaul is the king. And so to next to him, his son wouldn't have been appropriate to be kind of casual, that kind of casual. Not derech eretz for the son to be casually lying there next to his father. And therefore, the standard procedure was Vayad David Mesev ben Yonatan uven Shaul. Typically, there would have been somebody in between Yonatan and the king, and that somebody would have been David. Right? So the sequence would have been Shaul, then David, and then Yonatan, because that's the more appropriate derech eretz to the king. However, Achshav shelo bad David, in the absence of David, Lo esev Yonatan. Yonatan didn't want to recline there on that couch next to Shaul. Ad sheyeshev Avner mitzad Shaul. So he put Avner in David's place. So that there should be somebody between Shaul and Yonatan. Yachakach yeshav Yonatan mitzad Avner. And then Yonatan sat down, but he sat down on the other side of Avner.
So Yonatan...
So according to Rashi, and this is going to be one of the points of machloket between Rashi and the Radak, Yonatan does sit, he does recline, he does participate in the meal, he just does so on the other side of Avner. So imagine for a moment, here's your palace wall, here is Shaul's couch reclining chair, next to him is
Avner
in blue of David,
right.
And next to him is
Yonatan.
And even though it says Vayakom Yonatan, it doesn't mean that he stood up for the whole meal. It just means that he stood up and vacated that spot, or didn't sit in that spot to allow Avner to take the spot of David, and he moved over to his regular place, one over from David. In David's absence, Yonatan should have sat next to Avner, because it would just fill up the seats. You don't leave an empty seat next to the king. But Yonatan didn't want to, didn't think it was respectful, and so he put Avner in that place. According to Rashi, this whole lengthy description is all a reflection of
David's absence.
David's absence is what causes it, but Yonatan's desire to move over is a reflection of
Derech Eretz.
Kibud Av, or Mora Hamelach, reverence for the king. So says Rashi.
So can I just ask a question? Now, if David had been there, hypothetically, would Abner have been on the other side of Shaul then, probably?
Mm-mm.
No?
No, because that's what Rashi's asserting, that it would never have been appropriate for Yonatan to sit next to the king. The reclining state.
What I'm saying is, it would have been Shaul, and then if David had been there, David would have been where Avner is, and then Yonatan. Would Avner have gone to the other side?
Oh, Avner would have been on the other side? Who knows?
It didn't.
No, I know.
Matter.
No idea. We have no way of knowing where Avner normally sat, because this is the only description of such a meal in the story. So says Rashi. The only issue that I have with this, and this is the issue that the Radak picks up on, is that it doesn't read like a story in which Yonatan's behavior is being driven by extra kavod and derech eretz. Mm-hmm. Yonatan's behavior is being driven by a caution vis-a-vis Shaul. You know, Shaul is paranoid. Shaul is sitting with his back to the wall. Yonatan doesn't want to sit next to Shaul. Furthermore, it says that Yonatan stood up. It doesn't say that he sat down. So Rashi assumes that he sat down, because later on when he leaves the table, it says that he got up from the table. Vayakom me'al ha'shulchan. So if he got up from the table, it means that he must have at some point sat. Says the Radak, Vayeshev ha'melech ha'moshavo. Skip the first line, which is about the Targum. He also explains that the Moshav is a mitah. Ki minhag haya b'imimahem le'echol b'mita, b'mesiba, or heseba, b'matot, b'mitot, in beds. They would recline in couches, like that Rashi, that he agrees to Rashi on. V'chei metzanu b'divrei rabotei nezal, ki gam b'imahem haya minhag. That was their custom. Even Chazal talk about the fact that that was, or we find that in the days of our sages in the Talmud, that that's how they would recline to eat. When it says that Yonatan arose, Perusho, Achar sheyeshav mitzad aviv, initially he sat down next to his father in the absence seat. So he did sit. Come, but then he got up. Voshiv Avner mitzad aviv, and he placed Avner in that seat. Ki lo ratza liyot samuch l'aviv. He didn't want to be in close proximity to his father. She'im yiktzof alav al dvar David, if his father should be afraid, should be angry because of David's absence, lo yesamuch l'lakoto, he didn't want to be in arm's reach. He didn't want to be in harm's way.
You think that his father would have done something to him?
Well, his father does try to do something. His father tries to kill him. that's clear. His father tries to kill him in public. So, in the end. So, out of suspicion to his...
Too?
We read that, yes. He throws the spear at him.
Jonathan?
Yes. Didn't we read the story?
No, I don't know. That's why
I don't know. Oh, I thought we read it when we first. I thought we read it when we first went through this.
None of us remember.
Shaul's suspicions are well founded, but that's exactly what the Radak says.
You mean Yonatan?
Yeah, I'm confused. Yeah. In this seat here, which was typically that of David, David is not there, so Yonatan sat down. And the moment he sat down, whether he sensed something or not, not clear. He got up. Vacated, put Avner in that spot.
And then he came back.
And then what did he do?
Then I saw Avner.
Not quite. Either he sat Avner there, or he left, what I think the Radak is suggesting is that he left the seat empty. And then Avner sits over here, and Yonatan is standing over here.
Meaning? David's seat is empty.
David's seat is empty. And that would mean by Paked Moshev David that it leaves empty. That's what he says at the end. V'hinei nifkad mokom David shelo ayabo yoshev. David's seat remains empty. Which makes it more conspicuous that David is missing.
Right.
And Yonatan is over here. Why is Yonatan over here and not over here? Says the Radak. Not because Yonatan is being extra cautious in the honor and respect for his father, but because he's being extra cautious,
he
knows
afraid.
His father, right? He knows
afraid.
Very well. He is afraid. He is afraid of his father. We're not talking about Mora in terms of awe and reverence. We're talking about Ir in terms of fear. He knows exactly who he's dealing with, and he wants to stay away from
he knows what he's
spear length. Right? arm's length, but spear length.
Yeah.
Okay? Remember that Shaul is never without his spear. The Chanit never leaves his hand. We saw that once a couple of months ago when we first encountered Shaul. We talked about the fact that he's never without his Chanit, ever.
So
Yonatan is being particularly cautious. All right, so what happened? Oh, I thought we read this, but I could be mistaken.
We don't remember.
Pasuk Chavav. ולא דיבר שאול מאומה ביום ההוא, כי אמר מקרהו, בלתי טהור הוא, כי לא טהור. That first day, שאול doesn't react. David is missing, שאול doesn't react. Why doesn't he react? He, in his mind, says the Navi, made a reasonable or rational excuse for David's absence. Maybe he was impure, maybe he was mikreh, maybe he had some, it was, mikreh could be two words. Mikreh can be sort of just a happenstance, just happened to be, right? Conspicuous. Give him one day by or absence, excusable. Mikreh is also the word for carry, which is a form of tumah. So it could be that he's reflecting the fact that maybe he was impure and therefore didn't come to the table. That would have been an appropriate response as well. But that would only have lasted for one day. That could have been resolved that day, and he would have been expected to be there the next day, which is why Pasuk Chaf Zayin begins, Vayhi mimocharat ha-chodesh ha-sheni. 2 days Rosh Chodesh. I'll just remind us all that I threw out us the question a couple of weeks ago as to whether that 2 day Rosh Chodesh was expected or not. David talks about machar chodesh. Yonatan talks about machar chodesh. Suddenly we have mocharat ha-chodesh ha-sheni. Not just tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh, but now we have a second day Rosh Chodesh. Whether that was anticipated or not remains to be seen. That's all related to that last piece of the story we will come to, Bezrat Hashem, not today. Vahimi mochavat ha-chodesh ha-sheni, vayipaked makom David. Now David's absence is conspicuous. Vayomer Shaul el Yonatan bino. Shaul turns to Yonatan, and he says to him, Madu lo ba ben Yishai gam tmol gam ayom el halachem? Why is Ben Yishai not here today? Yesterday? Now he already includes yesterday in the question because he realizes that it's not that it's conspicuous, that it's intentional.
Is the wording Ben Yishai rather?
Oh, what does he call him? Ben Yishai. Ben Yishai. It's not David Ben Yishai. Avdecha Meshichecha. It's Ben Yishai. So Rashi suggests, and I think he's correct, that, well, not for me to say the Rashi's correct, I think just it resonates, that Ben Yishai is almost a pejorative. Mm-hmm. It's like, right. Shulman, where's Shulman? Right. You call somebody by their last name, not a mister, not a doctor, not a title, it's not like he didn't know who he was.
Right.
Call somebody Ben Yishai, and he does from... It's not an uncommon thing for Shaul to refer to David as Ben Yishai at this point in the story, or others in their moment of critique. So Rashi points this out, but it's interesting. He doesn't point it out here. He points it out in the Pasuk in Tehillim. Mm-hmm. If you look at the source page, there's a Perek in Tehillim, Perek Dalet, source 5, Amnatzeach min ginot mizmor le David. David is crying out to God, B'kori, as I cried out to God, Aneni, God, answer me, Eloketzi deki, God of my righteousness. But Tsar, in my troubles, in my anguish, in my moments of distress, Hirchavtali, you embraced me, Chaneni, be gracious to me, Shmatfilati, listen to my prayer, B'nei Ish, Ben Ish, son of a man, Ad makvodi lechlima, my honor has been disparaged. Teavun rik tivakshu chazav sela. I've been disappointed and neglected and embarrassed and shamed. Says Rashi, what is b'nei ish? Ad makvod lechlima, kvodi lechlima. Says Rashi, ad matai atem mevazimoti? How long are you going to allow them to disparage me, to make fun of me, to belittle me? And he quotes all the places in Shmuel where David is referred to as Ben Yishai, as an example of the disparaging way in which he is referred to. Re'iti et Ben Yishai, mi David, mi Ben Yishai, bichwot bni Ben Yishai, ki bocher ata le Ben Yishai, as if to say, Ein Lishem, I don't have a name. I'm Ben Yishai. So every place in Sefer Shmuel where he's referred to as Ben Yishai, it's usually in some kind of public critique. And this is a very good example. Where is Ben Yishai?
Is that true in general?
Oh, I think if you call somebody by their last name, unless it's like a friend calling a friend last name, I mean, you can tell from context, but usually.
No, I meant, is that, I mean, how does this happen a lot in Tanakh or not?
I would have to kind of process that with a computer and not my brain. But
but it's interesting, he says to Yonatan, his son.
Yes.
We know who Yonatan is. Right.
There's
so
a constant reference to Yonatan as
a
relationship.
Context,
correct. Yeah. And that's going to become only more acute as this paragraph reads on. Correct. Now Yonatan's answer. And as we read Yonatan's answer, you can begin to hear the tension rising, and Yonatan's own, I would say, conflict, inner conflict, to the point where he's stumbling over words. He's talking and he's watching Shaul's face. So can you imagine, especially according to the Radak, where he's standing on the other side of the room, he's talking to his king, to his father, the king, and he's watching his face. And what does he say? Vayan Yonatan et Shaul. Nishol nishal David meimadi ad Beit Lachem. Shaul, in the Hebrew, it's so much more powerful. Nishol nishal. He made a special request, or he asked, which is the language that David used to say to him, this is what you'll tell to your father. Say to your father that, Nishol, if you go back to Pasuk Vav, go back to Pasuk Vav for a moment. David says to Yonatan, in preparation for this scene, in Pakod Yivgedeni Avicha, If your father will see my absence, this is what you'll say to him. Tell say to your father, David made a request of me to go back to his father, to his family in Bethlehem, because there's a family feast. That one sentence is what he was requested. To go back to Beit Lechem, his city, for there's a family gathering there, a family offering there. This is what he says, though. פסוק חפחת again. ביאן יונתן את שאול, נשאל דוד מעמדי עד בית לחם. שאול, דוד made a request of me to go back to בית לחם. ויומר, he said, שלחני נא, please, send me. כי זבח משפחה לנו בעיר. We have a family gathering in the city. והוא ציווה לי אחי. He commanded me, my brother. ואתה, now, אם מצאתי חן בעיניך, if I found favor in your eyes, אם מלתנה, let me escape there. וראת אחי, and see my brothers. על כן לא באו שולחן המלך. That's why he hasn't come to the table of the king. Do you hear Yonatan stumbling? Almost kind of mixed phrases that disjointed phrases.
He keeps on adding information.
Adds information, and everything he adds, every time he opens his mouth, he buries himself deeper. Every word he says buries himself deeper. It's a remarkable passage. He says, Nish'ol nish'al David me'imadi. David made a special request of me to go back to Beit Lechem. Now watch his father's face. Right? David, in David's language, it was Larutz Beit Lechem Iro ki zevach haimim sham lemishpacha. He says, David wanted to go back to Beit Lechem, period. Vayomer, he said to me, Shalcheinina, send me. David didn't say to tell. I put these two sentences next to each other. You'll see there's all kinds of additional phrases in Yonatan's response. Shalcheinina, send me, he says to Shaul. Ki zevach mishpacha lanu ba'ir. What? And can you imagine Shaul's response? Think about Shaul for a second. What's he saying? What's he hearing? He's gone to Beit Lechem instead of
coming to my table.
He's gone to his family instead of
coming
the king. Wait, am I not family? I'm his father-in-law. I don't rate.
Evidently not.
Okay. Vehu tzivali achi.
Now, this is after he tried to kill, he chased the head of soldiers coming to his house and tried to kill him.
Now. Right. But remember, that was in secret. Nobody knows that.
A family like that. You don't need a family.
V'hu tzivali achi. He commanded or instructed me, my brother, saying, let me go see my brethren. Think Yosef and his brothers. The reference to hu tzivali achi, an interesting phrase. So the Rashi, Radak, and Mefarshim translate that as continuation of David's request. David is saying to Yonatan, my brothers back in Beit Lechem have commanded me, tzivali, saying to me, come to Beit Lechem. And therefore, Yonatan, says to David, saying to Yonatan, say to you, if I find favor in your eyes, Yonatan, let me go and see my brothers. But what is Shaul hearing? Shaul is hearing, David saying, my brother in Beit Lechem, but Yonatan speaking of David, comment to him, to Yonatan, David commanded me, saying, Achi, my brother, we are brothers, Yonatan and I. We are of Utsivali. He said to me, Achi, my brother, Ata, therefore now, let me go and see my other brothers. Shaul is hearing a very different conversation going on. And then, just to add a little bit of insult to injury, Yonatan uses a word that I don't think he intended to use. In describing what David wants to do, which is to go to Beit Lechem, to go spend the family gathering, Thanksgiving style, he uses the phrase, imaltana. Limalet means to escape. Let me escape to Beit Lechem. Escape? What do you mean escape? What does he have to escape for? Remember, nobody knows that Yonatan has tried to kill, that Shaul has tried to kill David. I'm not even sure Shaul remembers that he tried to kill David. Right? Shaul's worldview is... But this response of Yonatan every phrase. And just see the face of Shaul dropping, jaw dropping, the eyes. You can just see the reaction. Every phrase buries Yonatan further into the "you are siding with David" mindset. And that's where Shaul's response is. Shaul's response is to see Yonatan in cahoots with David. And that's where his response is so harsh.
The rabbi, it seems like he's already nervous.
That's why the Radak says, that's why the Radak, that's exactly why the Radak puts Yonatan here and not here, and says that he's here because he doesn't want to be in arm's reach.
Right.
He's that's already nervous to begin with. No wonder he's having trouble talking.
Right. That's exactly why the Radak says what he says. I agree with you.
But then Shaul, he sort of ignored the issue that David had a special reason for being home. It looks like there's some kind of religious life going on there or something.
Yeah, I don't think he bought it for a second.
Uh-huh. He never forgot by the time he got to Yonatan.
I don't think he bought it for a second.
And nevertheless, Yonatan could not bring himself to go. I mean, he's having all these conflicts and he's paraphrasing.
That's correct. No, Yonatan's position
still
is.
He didn't have the guts to go.
Right. Yonatan's position is extremely complicated. We'll get back to the Yonatan. Pasuk Lamed. Vayicha af Shaul b'Yonatan v'yomer lo. Shaul gets angry at Yonatan, and he says to him, and his response here is off the charts. Ben avata mardut, you rebellious manuvel, you son of a rebellious woman. You son of a treacherous woman. In modern language, let me put this to you bluntly. In modern language, he says, you SOB. Literally.
That's not very nice.
Remember that in so doing, he's cast aspersions on his, not his son, but on his wife. Why? And he explains it. Halo yadati ki bocherata leven Yishai. You now choose Ben Yishai over me? It's a zero-sum game. It's either me or him. Take your pick. Levoshtecha ulevoshet ervati mecha. To your own shame and to the shame of your mother. Ben navata mardut. What does his mother have to do with anything? And therefore?
She's guilty.
Right, she's guilty.
Right. What does Yonatan's mother have to do with anything in this context?
We don't really know who the mom is.
Doesn't matter. He shames. He's saying Yonatan has shamed his mother by choosing to side with David. Why?
What does she have to do with
it? Think dynastic kingdoms. Yonatan is the crown prince, right. Heir to the throne.
Right.
If he's stepping aside to allow David to take the throne, there can only be one explanation in Shaul's eyes.
That he's taking David's side rather than his.
That's rational.
That he's weak. Yeah.
That's rational.
What?
He's illegitimate?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, so that's
in the eyes of the people, you siding with David is going to create the rumor that you're an illegitimate child and therefore don't have a right to the throne. How dare you shame your mother like that? Ben Navata Mardut.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Ki kol hayamim asher ben Yishai chay al adama lo tikon ata umalchotecha. Don't you know that as long as Ben Yishai lives, your kingdom shall never be built and never be established? You will never become king? V'yata shlach v'kach oto elai ki ben mavetu. Go bring him to me. He is a dead man. Now, this is public. Everything up until now, Perek Yotet, where Shaul and Yonatan had a whole conversation about David out in the fields, and Shaul made a promise to him that he would never harm David, that was private, that was in secret. Shaul sends the messengers out to Shmuel to get David, that was private, that was secret, that was his inner circle. This is a public feast. This is a public declaration of war against David. You can't back off of this. It's either David or me we are at a crossroads. And you, Yonatan, how dare you? You will
he
now...
He calls him Ben Yishai over and
always.
Over and over again.
Correct. These paragraph breaks are really very powerful because they kind of give you this moment of pause in the conversation. What is Yonatan going to say now? Vayan Yonatan et Shaul Aviv. Yonatan responds to Shaul, his father. Again, there's that emphasis. Vayomer elav. Lama yumat? Masa. Why should he die? What did he do? Now, Yonatan is a very articulate individual. Yonatan has been able to mount defense against defense of David's behavior and to do so with great eloquence. Great eloquence. Right? Eloquence. He did it in Perek Yutet when he had a lengthy description of how David took his life in his hands, and he put his life in his hands, he wanted to smote the plishti, God gave great victory into his hands, you saw this victory, you rejoiced, why should you spill innocent blood, to kill David for nothing, for naught, if the king should not sin against David, against the innocent man, he hasn't sinned to you, all of his deeds are good to you, he has been able to defend David. Yonatan's defense of David here is four words. Lama yumat me'asa. Not a little out of character?
But there are times when you can't talk to people and people are very upset. There's no point in having a lot of words.
Right.
Yeah, it looks to me like he's very courageous to even say anything at all.
He's courageous, but also understood who he was talking to.
And
he realized that there's... Okay, so in a certain sense, he's making a public statement.
Yeah.
What did David do? I think everybody's standing around. Lama yumat me'asa. And he's just declared, Shaul for the first time is now publicly declared a death sentence on David. Ki ben mavetu. That's a king's public declaration of death sentence against a subject.
That's after he cursed his son and his wife.
Correct. And then he said, all because of David. All because if you side with David, you are siding with the enemy. Ki ben mavetu. And Yonatan's response is to plant in the mindset of everybody standing around.
Lama
yumat. Masa, what did he do? But in this, but I also think that there's an element of groping for words. Yonatan is being faced with a situation I don't think Yonatan expected. Remember, he was in denial up until this point. And so you could hear Lama yumat. Masa, what did he do? Okay, stunned. Shocked at the response. I would be shocked at the response too. Think about it.
He's probably thinking, oh, I should have gone with David. Why did
I don't know if he thought about that yet, but next pasuk.
He wasn't strong enough to go with him.
Vayatel Shaul etachanit alav lahakoto. Shaul picked up the spear to smite him. Now, it doesn't say what happened. It doesn't say if he threw the chanit. It doesn't say if he attacked. Doesn't say if he just threatened. Vayatel Shaul etachanit alav lakoto. Shaul actually does say thrust. Vayatel alav, thrust at him. Right? What does it translate it? Threw at him.
Shaul raised the spear at him to smite him.
At him. So it's not, again, it's unclear whether he actually threw it or he just picked it up to throw it at him. But in that moment, in that action, which was public. Vayeda Yonatan ki chalai mi maviv lamit David. Yonatan knew, understood, truly understood it for the first time, that it was in Shaul's intent
to kill
David. That's the reality check. What David said to him at the beginning, that I escaped with a hair's breadth, ki kifesa ben yu ben amavet, Yonatan now understood. Because Shaul had just picked up the spear to kill him just because he said four words, not even sided with him. Yonatan is at the feast. Yonatan is there. David went back to Beit Lechem. If you think about siding with somebody, if David has really escaped, then Yonatan should have gone with him, and Yonatan would have escaped too. Mm-hmm. Yonatan is sitting by the king. Yonatan is demonstrating a loyalty to the king. It's David who's escaped. But just for defending David, Shaul is ready to pick up the spear. Pasuk Lamed Dalet, Vayakom Yonatan Me'ima Shulchan B'chori Af. Yonatan arose from the table in anger. He was so angry he couldn't eat that day. He was distraught, he was distressed for David, on David's behalf, for his father's wrath against David. And that's the sense, and that actually in two levels brings us full circle to the beginning of the story, because remember it was when David first encounters Yonatan, and Yonatan says, "My father would have told me." David says, "You know why your father didn't tell you? He didn't want to distress you. Didn't want to make you upset. He didn't want, what was the language David used? Al yeda zot Yonatan pen yeatzev. He didn't want Yonatan to know this lest he be upset. And what happens here? Ki ne'etzav el David. Yonatan is upset. David said to Yonatan, whatever happens, don't hand me over to your father. Temiteni ata ve'alaviv lamazetvieni. Adavicha lamazetvieni. Don't bring me to your father. Yonatan looks at him and he says, are you crazy? Why would I have a dream of doing that? What position has his father put him in?
Go get him.
Go get him. An impossible position.
For Yonatan.
Yeah. Yonatan is being told, you want to prove your loyalty to me? You bring me David in chains. Right.
Yeah. But then he's telling David he's not going to take him.
Ki ben mevatu. So you put Yonatan in the position where for Yonatan to engage with David from Shaul, for Yonatan to prove his loyalty to David, what does he have to do?
Bring
him. He has to bring David to his father. Exactly what David predicted, and asked him not to do. Placing Yonatan in an impossible position.
But it feels like he was in a possible position to begin with, just because he was Shaul's son.
Yeah, well, now it's even worse. Yeah. Now it's worse. Now he, in a very public light, Shaul has declared war on David. Remember, this story is a turning point because it's public. It's the first time it's public. This is now the beginning of the civil war. In the public eye, he's declared war on David. He's declared David an enemy of the state. And he's put his son on notice that whatever he does next will determine
what will happen to him,
whose side he's on.
Right.
But does Shaul ever answer the question, why does he want to kill David?
No. Doesn't need
he
to at this
answers.
Point. Well, I mean, from Shaul's perspective, we know why. He saw David as a threat.
Yeah.
Saw David as a threat to his own kingdom and to his own dynasty, not only to his kingdom, but to his dynasty. What is how does he put it to Shaul? Kol yamim asher ben Yishai chay al adama lo tikon ata umalchotecha. You, my son, your throne is in danger. Your throne is in danger. As long as as long as David lives, you will never be king. It's just reboiling. We can unplug it at this point. Sorry. That's the impossible position that Shaul has put Yonatan in. So at this point, it's not a function of supporting David from afar and guiding him and being a spy for him, etc. At this point, it's Yonatan really only has two options. He can either commit treason and side with David, or he can stay with his father and abandon David. Those are the only two options he has left. And that's what makes the story so tragic. In the end, he will choose
David.
Right? No, His father.
Father.
In the end, he will stay with his father. That's why when you ask me the question of is it explicit, I think it's so implied in the story, because that's the position Shaul puts him into. Everything about the story is the moment of decision for Yonatan. What is going to be the outcome for Yonatan? And when the next parak begins, Vayakum Vayelech, David arose and ran, Vayonatan ba'ir, and Yonatan returned to the city, that moment of departure, you feel that tension. This was where Yonatan's decision was. In the end, Yonatan will die on Har Gilboa together with his father. Right? So he places his destiny along with that of his father, knowing, to an extent, that that means that he will end with his father and David will reign. He says so very clearly in Perek Chaf Gimel. He knows David will reign. Right. He doesn't know that he's going to die with his father, but he knows that David will reign. This is the tragedy of... This is the chasm that has grown between all the players. You have the tension between David and Yonatan, and now you have the tension between Shaul and Yonatan.
But because of Shaul's craziness, you really see that for his children lose everything. Michal loses her husband, even though he takes her back, but basically there are no descendants from that, and Yonatan's lost. And
right.
So the future's lost for Shaul.
Did Yonatan have to die? Because if he had lived, there would be a question of rival claims to the throne.
Not if Yonatan willingly gave the throne to David. Yeah. And he says so very clearly in Perek Chaf Gimel.
Yeah, they already talked about it.
He says in Perek Chaf Gimel, he says so. If you take a look briefly, two chapters later, how they end up meeting again is a story which we'll get to. Vayakam, Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Tet Zayin. Vayakam Yonatan ben Shaul, Vayelech el David Chorsha. Yonatan arose, went to David, ve'chazek et yado be'elokim, ve'yomer elav, said to David, al tira, ki lo timtza acha yad Shaul avi, my father David, Shaul will not find you here, he will not catch you, ve'ata timloch a Yisrael, ve'anochi eyelecha lemishne. You will one day be the king of Israel, I will be your assistant, I will be your second. Right? So, Yonatan knew clearly that David was going to be the king and that his role was to be his guide, assistance, his right hand, at least in his own kind of vision of the world, but that doesn't mean that he would abandon his father, that's the complexity of it, but he certainly knew that David was going to be the king. And that's in his hands to make, to enable, or at least to enable peacefully.
He didn't really choose Shaul instead of David. He tried to do the best he could for each of them, I think.
Doesn't suck.
I'm going to reserve judgment on that question until we read that Maimar Chazal about Nov Yerachon.
Stay tuned.
Okay.
I've never done anything much about that, so we'll have to wait and see.
I'm going to, at the end of this story, Chazal insert a piece about Yonatan that I think is a reflection not about it's a midrashic addition to the story, so I don't necessarily think it's about this, but it's also about that question. Did he really do the best for David that he could?
Under the circumstances.
Okay, so let's...
Okay, but he stayed...
Could there have been other things that he had done? I'm going to reserve judgment on it until we get there.
He stayed with his father, but he never brought David to his father. Right. I mean, so...
Right. To his credit, okay, yeah, right. Fine. Yeah. Grant him that.
Right.
We shall see. I'm going to reserve judgment on that until we get to the end of the story and see what it was that Chazal expected of Yonatan, whether that's in the pshat or not. I think it's a reflection of a broader expectation of Yonatan in this story that doesn't get met.
I look forward to it.
Yes. All right.
Sonny, you're so diplomatic.
Well, I'm trying to balance everybody's needs.
All right. We really need to... The next part of the story is sort of the last piece of this, which is the story of the arrows. But I really want to address that as a sheer into itself. So if I go there now, we're going to start and not stop. So I'm going to suggest that we actually finish a few minutes early, mm-hmm. stop here at a logical place. We will, as Rather Shem, pick up next week with the last piece of the story, which is the arrows, and then hopefully answer.
Next week we'll have
them.
So
next week we're on, it's the week after.
Next week.